Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, we are live. Sorry it's been a while, but we are back with another episode of Inside the Octagon, hosted by yours truly. I am Kalani Lua. You guys can find me on social media via Twitter at KLua11, K-L-U-A-1-1. I'm in here with someone who is no stranger to the mic at all, the fallen angel, Dominique Robinson. Dominique, what's going on, brother?
What up? Happy to be back.
Yes, sir. Good to have you back, man. Thanks for doing the show. And, man, we got a lot to get to. We got a lot of stuff to look back on, a lot of things to look forward to, not just in the cage, but outside as well. And we'll get to it as well. If you guys want to contact us while we're on the air, be sure to call in at 718-506-1506. That is 718-506-1506. Dominique, this past weekend, we had UFC in Houston, UFC Fight Night in Houston, and you know, the headline obviously was the return of the Korean Zombie taking on Dennis Bermudez. And being gone for nearly 3 years, the Korean Zombie came back looking better than ever. Tell me, in watching the fight, fighter being gone that long, what did you like about the Korean Zombie coming back after such a long layoff?
Man, I've always been a fan of Korean Zombie since before he was even in, before WEC, you know? And when he first got out there, he looked uncomfortable, you know, and he took that right hand and he looked rocked. And I was like, oh, my God, please don't let his durability be gone. He don't look comfortable, please. But then I noticed Bermudez didn't look comfortable, too. And then once I saw a Korean Zombie throwing his hands up in the air, Diaz style, I was like, all right, he about to get into a groove. And like no more than a minute later, it was over. So I like he to do that well against who you know how he did, top 10 guy, 3 years off, that was a good comeback. We saw how BJ looked and it was nowhere clean. So
well, that also goes to show you that not only is everybody different and Father Time is unforgiving for some, but for BJ, obviously with all the wars that he's been in, Korean Zombie's no slouch or no stranger to wars himself, but even that time away where his mindset was to come back. Remember, when BJ left, it was almost like, hey, I'm done. I'm out of here. No mas. Kareem was just like, I got to do this. Otherwise, I'm right there close to another title shot. So I want to come back. So I think the motivation the whole time he was gone really helped provide him to come back looking as good as he did. I was wondering if – do you think that he wanted to get into that style, like how you said, throwing his hands up, wanting to get in a slugfest with Bermudez because he had been gone for a while, so he really didn't want this to be dragged out too long and fear that maybe his cardio just isn't there yet? I mean, hey, ring rust is a serious issue for some fighters. Mm-hmm. Do you think that played into it that he said, you know what, I want to make this a brawl, I want to make this a scrap, because if it gets too technical and draws out, I might just gas out because I've been gone for so long? What did you take of that?
I'm not sure that guy's thought processes go that far. You know, he's always trying to make it a war and a brawl, because if you look at his striking, he has power and it's real unorthodox. And you know, the point you made about BJ, it's a legitimate point. BJ was chilling on the beach in Hawaii like Ziggy Marley, you know, and and Korean Zombie, he said that he was still allowed to actually train MMA while he was in the military. So you know, I think he felt comfortable training wise but of course in there it's kind of different. And I think it was just a matter of him getting comfortable back in there with real punches thrown at him, and then it, you know, it's just systematic from there.
Now, we also did see that Bermudez, who did, you know, he did get finished in the first round via KO. He did land two solid rights on the Korean Zombie. Now, considering that it is a first round finish, does Korean Zombie move up and take on another tough challenger, maybe somebody in the top six, top five? Or does he say, you know what, let me just take another guy at the bottom of the top 10, maybe on the cusp of the top 10, kind of still get my groove back? Or do you just say, nope, we're shooting you straight up to the top? Top of the lines, then. What would you do?
If I was his coach, Greg Blackson, I would say one more, because it took him a while to start getting comfortable, and the fight was over once he started to get comfortable. So me personally, I don't feel he reached that point of full comfortability yet. So I will have him take on another 6 through 10. And then after that, go for top five, because the top five are murderers, you know?
No, definitely. They definitely are murderers there in the featherweight division. And it's interesting. At one point in time, the featherweight division, not saying that it was dead in the water, but it did look like it was stale. Jose Aldo seemed to pull out of every other title defense that he had. You know, Frankie Edgar just couldn't seem to push the button when it mattered most. And Chad Mendes had two chances against Aldo, just couldn't do it. Then you got the Irishman coming in. Loud, brash, just goes out, tears up the whole division. But then when he leaves, people are wondering, what's going to happen with the division now when the champion is gone? He's up at lightweight or at welterweight. Who knows? He might be at middleweight pretty soon, considering what the news we've been hearing. And now you got Aldo, who got knocked out in 13 seconds. Can people really respect him as a champ? Now you look at Max Holloway, the way that he's looking. Then you got the Korean Zombie coming back, getting a first-round finish. The UFC featherweight division is certainly looking a lot more exciting and is definitely on the rise once again and saying, hey, there is going to be a lot of good matchups to make in 2017 in the 145-pound division. Now, last thing on the main event here, before we move on to some of the other fights on the card and then talk some more MMA news. The Korean Zombie, do you think obviously everyone has a chance to be, you know, in MMA, one punch, one kick, one knee, one good submission, you could be the champion. But do you think the Korean Zombie has what it takes to not only get back to a title shot, but considering that he probably will have to face Max Holloway, do you think he actually has what it takes to not only get a title shot, but to win the title?
I do. I actually do. You know, his jiu-jitsu's there, and it's a unique style of jiu-jitsu. You know, he doesn't have that traditional gi style or no gi style. You know, he's more like, he reminds me more of the 10th Planet guys, you know, Eddie Bravo style. So you never know what's coming at you. He has the power to finish you. He has the durability to get through those rounds, and he has the cardio to get through those rounds. He's shown that in numerous fights. And you know, the thing that I would have said before that might have stopped him was his takedown defense, because you know, a good wrestler maybe could take him down and hold him out through those rounds, but he showed that he really got better in that area in this fight. You know, he just shut down the takedown to the point where he didn't even want to shoot in anymore. So with that being said, I do think that guy's could win it. If you look at McGregor, his strikes are unorthodox, and he did well against Holloway, even though Holloway's got much, much better
since then. They both have grown as fighters since they first met. I'd love to see that rematch of me those too. Two going at it again, because I think they are two completely different fighters now. Should be a hell of a fight, but
but that unorthodox striking, it's hard to get past that, you know? Things coming at angles like that, so...
Okay, now with the unorthodox striking, does that come from guys doing what John Jones did, basically learn how to strike from YouTube? Or is that something that you actually practice, kind of like a Dominic Cruz? You practice the movement, the head feints, all the moving around, and that's something you just repetitively do. How does a fighter get like that? Because we're starting to see now, Jones was unorthodox, the success. McGregor's unorthodox, success. Korean Zombie did have success before he had to go away, comes back KO. Is that something guys just naturally have, or is that something they actually practice in the gym so that they can bring a different element to the fight?
I think it's actually two different kinds. Because if you look at somebody like Dominic Cruz, there's a set system, which so he had to have practiced that. If you look at McGregor, his isn't complex. He has like a right uppercut. He has a fall back left straight. It is really simplistic, but his timing and power is such that, you know, with the lack thereof of boxing skills in MMA, is he's taking everybody out with it. And if you look at John Jones, his is practice too, because he sets traps, you know?
Yeah, he would.
And but with somebody like Cub Swanson or Korean Zombie, I don't really think it's practice. It's almost like they're trying to learn a skill set. Let's just use boxing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And they never quite grasp the technique of it.
Okay.
So they get stuck at a certain point where they're almost like a boxer brawler. And that's where the unorthodox come from. It's from a person not being able to fully grasp the concepts of an art in those cases. Because if you look at Korean Zombie, there's no traps or setups or patterns like Dominic Cruz or anything. It's just like punches coming at angles they shouldn't come from, and they land, and he has the power to get rid of you, you know. And sometimes, you know, like when I sparred James, you know, just in Thailand, I was sparring these top kickboxers from Glory and everything, doing fine, because everything comes in the same patterns, you know. Even at the highest level, just people might have more power and more fluidity to it. But when you go against these unorthodox people, they don't even really know what they're doing, so you don't. And it's actually harder. And I think that's the case with Korean Zombie.
That is an interesting take on it. And I definitely understand where you're coming from with that. I'll tell you, with somebody like him or even like a Cub Swanson, you know, you got to wonder if their unorthodox ways can get them to that next level. Can it get them to a title shot? Can it get them a victory? Because we've seen that sometimes if those type of fighters take on someone with technique, with fundamentals, they sometimes get exposed. You know, we saw Cub Swanson, as good as he looked against the Korean Superboy, look how bad he looked against Frankie Edgar. I mean, there were two different fighters right there within a relative short period of time of each other. So it's not like he fought Frankie Edgar back in 2013 and then they met here. So I think sometimes that way can definitely work, but kind of like with McGregor, you can be unorthodox, but you got to have some type of flow to it, to where if you're taking on somebody with fundamentals, with technique, that your unorthodox ways can still work as opposed to being exposed. You know, if you're a loopy puncher, a guy's going to hit you with straights the whole time, and you're really, you know, unless you could clip him on the chin, you're really not going to be as effective as you hope so. So with the Korean Zombie, with the power, I hope he doesn't fall in love with his power like we've seen so many fighters do, and he just continuously works and works and works on his skill set going forward overall. Dom, and looking at the UFC's top 10, who would you like to match him up with? We got Yari Rodriguez, who looked absolutely amazing against BJ Penn. Charles Oliveira, but he's always having problems with his weight, so he may eventually move up to lightweight. Pettis is going back up to lightweight. Jeremy Stephens, heavy hitter, just came off of a loss. Cub Swanson is hotter than ever right now after what he did to Don Cho Ho. And then Ricardo Lamas. I mean, in looking at the top 10, who would you go after for the Korean Zombie's next matchup?
I like Charles Oliveira. You know, he's that dude that he has those performances where you're like, holy shit, you see the chokes he's putting on people. And then sometimes you're like, what happened to him? You know, so he's that good limitless test, you know, like that right in the middle guy who shows those flashes of brilliance, and he can push Korean Zombie to an extent. But also, you know, that a guy like Korean Zombie can break him because he's been broke before. So I think it's that right amount to go to next before he goes for those big five.
And for Oliveira, even though it is a good matchup, Oliveira is a, you know, he's kind of rough right now. Not only has he lost his last two fights, but he's lost three of his last four to Max Holloway, Pettis, and Lamas. His one victory came back in December of 2015 against Miles Jury. So he's somebody who's really looking forward to not just making weight, but getting back in the win column as well. Dom, if we look at the rest of the card here, you know, just some of the fights, the co-main event, the women's strawweight division, Felice Herring, you know, obviously she does a lot of stuff on social media, very big personality. She gets a very good victory over a very hyped up Alexa Grasso by decision. What did you think of the co-main event of the women throwing it down?
I picked Felice Herring to win,
really,
actually, because Felice Herring, and I love Alexa Grasso. You know, I was watching her in Invicta, but the thing about her is, she's, you know, and I was going to address this when you were talking about the Frankie Edgar Cub Swanson fight, is like, I didn't attribute that to his unorthodox style. I attributed the loss more to a lack of diversity, you know, because he got out wrestled there. And when I looked at Alexa Grasso and I thought about this matchup, I'm like, Felice, she started as a kickboxer. People don't know that. But if you look at her MMA game, most of her wins are submissions. You know, while Alexa Grasso, if you watch her fighting Invicta and everything, it's just boxing, 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 boxing. She doesn't really do more than that. And I was like, after Felice's last performance before this fight, I was like, you know, this girl, she, whatever she lost, that fire, she found it back. And if she performs like that again, she'll beat Grasso because she's able to mix it up more. And that's basically what happened. Because, you know, if you have two strikers, it's going to come down to who's doing the rest
of the arts, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And I saw that in Felice, not in Alexa, as much as I like her cute little self, but, mm-hmm. you know, that's why I picked Felice to win it. She looked good doing it.
You know, with Felice Herring, you know, we're seeing a women's strawweight division really grow. It went from being, we'll see how this division goes, and, okay, we got one or two good fighters, and now we're starting to see from top to the middle, bottom of the top 10, and even outside of it, we're starting to see there's a lot of good talent coming in there and just getting better and better and better. Then, like how you said, you got Invicta, and you got women from different disciplines coming in, whether it's boxing, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai. And when I was watching this fight, I was like, you know, Alexa Grasso, can she live up to the hype, the promise? She's in the co-main event. And we've seen this with fighters, you know, who are supposed to take that next step. That next, hey, this is your fight. If you go out there, you look impressive. Now you get a bigger fight going forward, a little more push behind you. We'll see what can go down. Sometimes it works. Other times, and I'm not going to say she folded under pressure, because giving all credit to Felice Herring and her performance for going out there. But sometimes, as a fighter, Dom, talk to about the pressures of being one fight away from taking that next big step. As a fighter, is that playing in your mind? In training camp, walking to the ring, in the ring, is that playing in your mind, or is that just something else media and fans like to talk about?
You know, that's kind of a complex question, because I would have to speak objectively. You know, subjectively, for me, and I know some fighters are the same way, it's all the same, man. I don't want to lose, and I don't want to let down the people, you know, my friends, my family, and everything, so I don't. It could be UFC main event. I'm as nervous as when I was fighting back in Mexico and just started all the way to a UFC. Man, I don't care, man. My fights have been the same. I'm like shitting my pants, like nervous backstage and everything. But, you know, once I get up there, I'm like, it's go time. You're not taking this and from me, you know, and the people who helped me. But I do know some people who they get, you know, they don't recover from it. Mm-hmm. You know, they put too much pressure on themselves, and it's a balance that you have to find, you know? And so I think it's based on the individual, but you know, history predicates that most people end up folding. You know, a lot of people, more people than not, have been like Alexa. They get there with the hype behind them and they just fold. So I think more people have a mental issue that they have to deal with than not, you know?
Now, not trying to throw any shade here. You haven't fought in the UFC yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a big word. But is it because it's the UFC? Is it because this is the big stage? You know, granted, you know, everyone's got their opinions about it. But,
yeah.
You know, this is the NFL. This is the NBA of mixed martial arts. This
mm-hmm.
is where you want to be, better or for worse. Is it because it's that stage? Is it because you're in a bigger arena, the light's a little brighter, a little more crowd? Or is it just... It just wasn't my night. I mean, what would you say could go into it? Because even Cowboy Cerrone talks about how he had to talk to a sports psychologist, and one of the reasons he does so many activities during training camp even is to keep his mind off of fight so he doesn't just basically go crazy with anxiety
mm-hmm.
going into it. Is it because it's the big promotion? Is it just the pressure of wanting to succeed and not fail on such a big stage? Why is it that so many fighters tend to struggle with this when they do get their chance in the UFC?
It's odd because, you know, I can only speak outside again. I would think, because I've been in this position, and I would think some fighters would agree with me, that the fight you have to win to get into the UFC, other than the UFC title shot, is probably the most pressure you can ever feel. You know, because when you're in. You know, when you have that fight where they're like, hey, you got to win this to get in. You know, I've been there. And even with me being the person that chills out before I go in the ring, I do replay that in my mind over and over. So I don't personally understand how somebody like Alexa Grasso, it's not like they said, if you win this fight, you get a title shot. I can imagine that being a pressure one as well, you know, but outside of a title fight, a number one contender fight for the title or the fight to get into the UFC, I don't understand what the difference is between any fight. You know, this was her second fight in the show, so I don't know why she would put any more pressure on herself or anything would affect her more than the first fight.
No, and that's true. And you know what? It could be that, you know, she's in a co-main event and, you know, it's Super Bowl weekend and, you know, a lot of eyes are going to be on you. It's in Houston, so that's a big arena. So maybe that plays into it as well. You know what? But let's not make it so much that she failed, because Felice Herring did go out there and execute it. So I don't want to make it seem like we're just throwing shade at Felice Herring, not giving her her just dues. But Alexis Grasso, she's 23 years old, plenty of time to come back, get better, and do her thing in the cage. Another interesting fight that I really liked here, and I wanted you to kind of talk about this, was James Vick taking on, how do you say that name?
Abel Truilla.
There you go. There you go. In a lightweight bout. And the reason I wanted you to talk about it was he finished him off with a Darce choke. But it was like his second or third attempt at locking it in. My thing is this. Look, I get it. Some people are just better at certain areas of the fight game than that. If I get into it with Floyd Mayweather, he's better at standing up. I better take him down. I get that. But how do you let somebody put it? I mean, a Darce choke is not a rear naked choke or a guillotine. Yeah. That's a difficult choke to get in. And you get it in two or three times in one fight? I mean, is James Vick that good? Or did Trio just not respect his ground game at all?
I don't know. I picked James Vick to win. He was out in Thailand with me.
Nice.
I kept asking him to spar or grapple, but he never would. So I was kind of disappointed
in
that.
That's a good thing you did. He might put you in a Darce choke.
He ain't going to Darce choke me. I ain't Trujillo. But it's funny because I tweeted during the fight. I was like, he's basically throwing himself into the Darce choke.
Yeah.
I've never personally seen somebody keep getting darced like that, even on a jiu-jitsu match. It was like he kept putting himself in it. You know, it was a strange occurrence to me, especially at the quote-unquote highest level. I see some of the worst mistakes, you know, and that was obviously one of them. So I can't even give you an answer of why or how that would happen. That's like being in a rear naked choke 10 times, you know, like in one fight. Yeah. It don't happen. So
it's like, stop giving up your back.
But Vic looked good. You know, kudos to him.
Yeah, I mean, James Vick, I mean, look, all the credit in the world to him for going out there, putting on a fantastic showing. The Darce choke is an effective choke, especially when you get it in lock good. And you know what? He was just a better man that night. And I got to say, Trillo is a good fighter. Hopefully, he learns that, hey, maybe I got to work on, even if you don't focus on just doing your all-around jiu-jitsu, at least ground defense.
Yeah.
Getting out of the submissions, kind of like Chuck Liddell. He's got a wrestling background, but Chuck never looked to take you down, except the one time against Vanderlei. He was always trying to make sure he either stuffed your takedowns or if you took him down to get right back up as fast as possible because he wanted to stay in the bang. So I definitely would like to see him put improve in that area, so to speak. One fighter in particular I wanted to talk about, and this is more so the fighter as opposed to the actual fight. OSP, Ovin St. Preux. This is a guy who was not undefeated, but he was on a nice win streak. KO Shogun Hua in what, like 13 seconds or so, or 27 seconds or something. And then, you know, he was a challenging for the interim title with John Jones, gave him a run for his money. Like, whoa.
With a broke head.
With a broke arm that he barely got early. But now we're starting to see that he hasn't been able to recover so much since that John Jones fight. A loss to Jimmy lost to Jimmy Manawar, which he got finished for,
and then
his decision won. No, I'm not taking anything from Manawar.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anything away from him, but you figure, you're this guy, the young prospect that everyone was looking at. You give the best fighter in the world, or at least in history at the time, you give him a run for his money. Granted, he was gone for like a year, so okay, maybe some ring rust, and now you're on this 3-fight losing streak. What does OSP need to do to turn his fortunes around to get back in the win column going forward? Because it's not like he's outside the Manawar fight. He's not getting smoked in these fights. He's not getting manhandled. What does he need to do? Is it because he's not at a better camp with better quality sparring partners? Is it just a run of bad luck? What are you seeing?
I don't know. I'm one of the few people that believe in a small team over a big team because I come from a boxing background. I like the small, loyal group where the coaches focus on you and you can bring in who you need as the sparring partner. I don't know if OSP is doing that or not. You know, he could be like Uriah Hall and just have that mental block. Granted, that dude that he fought impressed me. That dude had solid striking.
He did.
You know, I know he was probably like, oh, yeah, new guy. I got this in the bag. Then the dude come out like that. He's like, whoa, you know, but still, this isn't the first fight where he's been that tentative. You know, granted, I have to be open to say I thought he won. I thought the guy took the first round by a lot, but I thought OSP edged second and third. But with skills like that, he shouldn't be edging anything. He should be like, this is either finishing you or it's like, oh, that's clearly OSP's round, and that's his fault, you know? So it could be that Uriah, I'm just call it the Uriah Hall syndrome, you know, where people doubt themselves, second guess themselves. You know, I've actually been there, you know, where I'm like, man, I dropped this guy. Why ain't he dead? You know, yeah. and stuff like that. So, you know, I haven't been there to that extent, but you know what, a guy like that, he just, maybe he need tougher challenges in the training room. You know, maybe that is what it is. Because if you get through those tough challenges in the training room, I don't believe in beating up your brain in the training room, but some people wrestling his ass, doing this, coming at him, who cares, you know? Then maybe I believe that that can change things.
I definitely do like the idea of a smaller gym focused on the fighter, but I also do believe in training with not only different coaches, but also better fighters than you, even if they're in different weight classes. Just so you could get different looks, you can get the different feel of, okay, this guy's much better wrestling than me. Oh, okay, see, that I thought I was good, now I'm taking on him. Because yeah. What you don't want to do, and no disrespect to the Hall of Famer, but you don't want to end up being like Ken Shamrock was. Mm-hmm. At the Lions Den, you're the top guy, you're beating everybody up, but then when you get in the cage, you're realizing those aren't Lion Den fighters. Yeah. You know,
you have to bring in the part. Like, that's what I was saying, like boxers, they bring in the sparring partners. And those sparring partners are there to push you. They ain't bringing in no chumps. You know, they ain't paying those guys to come in. That's no chumps. He needs, you know, you need that. And you don't have to be at a big camp for that. You can always fly people in, you know, because big camps, I know tons of big fighters, and they even say they get lost in the shuffle sometimes. You know, have your small camp, have your coaches focus on you. I don't believe in a million different coaches because I've seen stuff get mixed up and everybody giving too much instructions, but that doesn't take away from your coaches should be setting up your camp and bringing in the right people. But MMA, I'm not big on a lot of these coaches. You know, I don't even know where they come from. And if when you listen to them in the corner, you can tell it's almost like the newbies, you know, and it has to start before your fighter even gets in the cage. You have to set up their camp right. They cardio, they strength training, they nutrition, they sparring, who's working out with them, you know, and just like boxers do, but boxing has been around a long, long, long time, you know, and with OSP, I'm with you right there. Something has to change, you know, because to be that taken aback like he was in that first round, if he had the right sparring, that would never happen. You know, he looked like, whoa, like it was his first time seeing somebody punch at him in a while or something. It was strange. So he needs to change something.
Well, I think it's also like you said that you know, he was taking on a new guy, and kind of he might have just had that complex of, look who I've been in the ring with. Win or lose, I've been in here with some tough guys. This is a new guy. This is gonna be a cakewalk. And like you said, whoa, man, you really hit me now. Okay, I guess we really are fighting. So that is something that a fighter does need to work on. Now, fight of the night, potential fight of the year: Jessica Andrade, Angela Hill. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And once again, the ladies showing you they can not only hang, but potentially outdo the men with exciting fights. Jessica looked like a female juggernaut coming forward. She would not be denied. Angela Hill was, you know, getting a little bit of her breakdancing on with the moving around, sticking and moving, but she just couldn't keep the pressure of Jessica Dry off of her. I mean, this fight right here from start to finish was just it was a ton of fun, excitement. It was almost like that movie Play to the Bone with Woody Harrelson and Antonio Banderas. You know, it wasn't the main event, but it was so exciting. Everybody was paying attention to it. What did you think about that fight, and how did you like how Andrade looked in there?
Angela Hill, I actually thought that Andrade was going to take her down and just sub her. And I was like, man, why are they always doing this to Angela Hill, man? But it turned into something I just did not expect. That was a war. And Andrade already knew she fought like that, but I did not know Angela Hill had a chin and heart like that, man. I was pleasantly surprised, you know? And she didn't get choked when she was on her back. I was watching TV like, not again, please, you know?
Yeah,
so Andrade, the only thing is she was starting to die off in the cardio. So if she's going to fight JJ,
she has to work on that. But man, those are punches that I feel would have dropped if you drop JJ, because the stuff JJ's been dropped with has been less than that, you know. So that's going to be a great, great, great fight when she fights JJ, you know, because that nothing deters that girl from going forward. But she got to move her head some fighting JJ, you know.
Ooh, look, see, I was thinking the same thing when I was watching. I said she punches hard. And she could take a, you know, she could take a good looking back and whatnot. She punches hard, but her head stays. I don't know if she had a neck brace on or a stiff neck or something, but she needs to go to a masseuse or whatever and get that worked out. Because I was just thinking, even though JJ isn't the strongest hitter, with her jab and her quick striking, if she could do what Angela Hill did, but put that jab out there, she could just keep her off of her the whole time, bust up her nose and keep her at a distance. And yes, Angela Hill, you know, didn't have a good run after the Ultimate Fighter in the UFC. Leaves, goes out, wins four straight, wins the Evicta women's title, comes back, did the Sagat from Street Fighter during the weigh-in. That was awesome. And if you saw the Invicta weigh-in, she's always doing a character. So obviously a lot of entertaining there. But, yeah, she showed tremendous. It was almost like she said, okay, this time, now that I'm back in the UFC, win, lose, or draw, I got to go out here and fight. I got to go out here and put on a show. I got to show why I deserve to be here and why, you know, even though I lost, I am going to be one of the best women in this division. Before we talk about Andrade and JJ, Angela Hill, even though she lost, she put on a hell of a performance. Where do you go with her going from here?
I'm not sure who she should fight next. You know what? I think she needs to go. They need to give her a little bit lower tier competition for once, because
take a look here at the women's top. I'm showing you rankings 4 to 15 right now in the women's strawweight division. Any name jump out to you that says that's
her
a good matchup?
Alexa Grasso, another striker. You know, because Angela Hill, a lot of people were like, oh, she sucks, but they didn't give her. They didn't do no Paige VanZant with her. They gave her, like, top people while she's new to MMA. She hasn't even had a lot of fights. So I feel like in Invicta, she was getting to develop herself more, you know, and that's why you saw her getting better to where she could fight Andrade the way she did. But she's still new even after this fight. So give her somebody like Grasso. Grasso still, they have almost even number of fights. I think Grasso got a few more, you know, and another striker, and let her do her thing, you know what I mean? Take it down a little bit. She's always fighting like Andrade, Namajunas. Like she gets like the top. I'm like, damn,
murderer's row of the women's division. And when you go that route, it is not going to be easy to go up that ladder of success. So it is difficult. It is hard. Now, Jessica Andrade, we know that she's a very good grappler. She's been in some international jiu-jitsu competitions. Very hard striker, definitely shows a lot of heart, can take a pretty good punch, even though she did have, I don't know if it was a slip or if that was an actual drop in the third round when she got hit. It looked like she was coming in and it was a slip, but I couldn't really see, you know, if that's what it was. But considering how hard she hits, I was thinking about this. You said how JJ, you want a young JJ, the women's strawweight champion. How she's been hit with bigger, she's been hit with lesser shots and it's gone down. I was thinking, because JJ's in her last couple fights, she's been hit more often, more and more in each fight has progressed. And she has talked about potentially leaving the sport sometime soon to start a family or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Do you think Andrade could be the one to do what every Carolina couldn't do, what Gedalia couldn't do, what Peña, what those women couldn't do, and have the power, the determination, and the will to come forward to dethrone the champion, or with a Polish superstar still be the champ?
Well, I'm putting on record that Gedalia, I had Gedalia beating her both fights, so I don't even think she should be champ. But Andrade, I actually been waiting for her to fight JJ, because that's who I pick. I pick her and Gedalia is the only two people I see that can beat JJ. So I've been waiting to see. We've seen Gedalia, so now I've been waiting to see Andrade. So I have her beating JJ. So, you know, and that was before this fight. And then after I saw JJ fight KK last time and get hit with that little punch with nothing on it and damn near knocked out, she can't take Andrade's hits. And the thing about JJ, she has high offensive capabilities, which are her defensive capabilities, but she don't move her damn head neither, you know? So she can't get hit by this girl, but we know this girl could get hit by her. So that's a tough matchup for her.
With Ioana training down at times. I don't know if she's full time or if she's just training there off and on with ATT full time. Okay, so she's at American Top Team. Hopefully, while she's down there, she does work on the head movement. She's obviously going to, her cardio is good, but she is going to have to make sure that she can keep up that pace because with Andrade coming forward, she's going to have to be on her bicycle. She's going to have to stick and move. And yeah, with her offense, she's really going to have to make sure she sticks that jab out there. Throw the front kick to the body, keep Jessica away from her. What's interesting is not only if and when Jessica hits her, but then what if Jessica can grab her and take her to the ground? That's going to be interesting as well. That's going to be a tremendous fight when those two ladies hook up, whether it's a main event or a co-main event. That's going to be a tremendous fight going forward. I'm certainly looking forward to it. Another interesting one in the women's strawweight division, it was a catchweight bout at 117.5. Batisha Torres defeating Beck Rollins by unanimous decision. It's going to be interesting to see where Tisha Torres goes from here. She seems to be one. She kind of seems like she fell in a Sarah McMahon hole where, yeah, there was a lot of hype behind her, but then it was like the one big fight she has, she loses, and she just never got, you know, whether it's injuries or having to sit out, she was just never able to get that momentum back to going back to the top of the division for another title run. Hopefully with this victory, they give her somebody else, and we'll see somebody else that's a little bit higher. We'll see how that works out. But let's get to the cheese of this real quick. UFC 208. In fact, hold on. My apologies. Before we get to 208, you mentioned something earlier when we were talking, and I wanted to bring it up in between the discussions here. And I want to talk to you about it because you're a workout person. You get to work. And even if you don't have a fight coming up, you don't have a fight coming up right now, do you? No. And I come in, and what are you doing? You're on the damn treadmill. I follow you on Instagram. You're in the Las Vegas Athletic Gym. You don't invite me none, but it's okay. I'm at the buffets getting my workout on it, too. But you're constantly working out. What I wanted to ask you is this, and I heard this on the Joe Rogan podcast. Mm-hmm. As a fighter, whether you're coaching somebody or you're training, in off season, when you don't have a fight, should that be when you worry on your technique, your sparring, your grappling, doing all that? Then when you do have a fight scheduled, all you focus on for the most part is like 80, 85% strength and conditioning. Because we see a lot of times guys gas out. Guys don't have the strength to hold position on the ground or up against the fence. And then they gas out more because either I'm holding you against the fence or you're holding me or we throw some punches. Next thing you know, we're looking like Kimbo Slice and Dada, just hungover. Talk about the strength and condition, how much strength and conditioning do you think a fighter should allot to themselves during training camp? Do you think it should be higher than their sparring? And maybe in training camp, we just do light sparring and some pad work, but mostly strength and conditioning. How do you feel about that?
Me personally, and I don't get tired, you know, ever, you know, mine is almost, it's the same almost. I train. Like, these guys be like, oh, yeah, I'm off-season. There ain't no off-season for me. You know, I don't believe in that. That's why you see, even at the highest level, a lot of people might hear this and be like, oh, who the fuck are you? You're not in the UFC. I don't lack in any skill set. A lot of people don't know that because I don't get taken down and everything. But my jiu-jitsu is cool. My wrestling is cool. I just use it to stay where I want to. You have to get past offense one before I use anything else. When you see these UFC guys, they all have huge missing areas, a lot of them. That's because they aren't training in the off season. You know, me, I'm not big on sparring at all. I'm technique, getting in my grappling rounds, getting in my pad work, technique. When I have a fight coming up, only thing I do is change the intensity of my cardio, you know, and then I change the intensity of the sparring. Instead of just doing technical sparring, I put it to like 75-80%. You know what I mean? And that's literally, and I changed the way the rounds are for sparring, you know, to match a fight. That's it. I changed nothing else. You know, and you know how it's like you add too many ingredients to something to get bad, or you try to keep trying new stuff, it gets worse. Mm-hmm. Not like that. You gotta find, because different fighters work different ways. You gotta find something simple and scientifically proper, you know, that works and stick to it. and you just need minute changes. Mm. You know what I mean? If you got a, if you jogging, everybody knows forever, it gets you in shape. Boxers been doing it forever. Wrestlers been doing it forever. So if you have something coming up, jog faster. You know, it's like that simple. Go faster. Put your, you don't have to change the amount of miles you're doing or anything else. Get it done faster. You know, your rounds, put more into it where you're being pressed more, you know, and that's it. If you were doing 3-minute rounds in MMA, you obviously have to do 5, change it to 5. It don't have to be, people try to wear parachutes and push sleds and shit like that. I don't do any of that. And I ain't never been overpowered. They trying to do too much new. And if you look at the strongest person I ever fought, only time I ever even felt somebody, and I'm like, damn, they're strong back, was in Russia. And they do the most simplistic of stuff. They don't have all the technology.
To be fair, they wrestle bears.
True.
And I saw Rocky IV. Which is a true story, okay? That little needle shot right there, that ain't a flu shot.
Hey,
all right?
In Thailand, I seen a whole new level of flu shots.
But it's the reason they call Thailand. It's the reason the capital of Thailand is Bangkok, okay? I seen the Hangover, too. Oh, boy, you better be careful out there. No, but and see, when I heard this on the Joe Rogan podcast, shout out to Joe Rogan and his podcast on the Joe Rogan Experience, I heard it and I was giving it some serious thought and thinking back to a lot of fights that I've seen where guys look good in the opening round, but then as it goes on, they start to wear down. And then I'm sitting here wondering, well, damn, I mean, it's different. But if I could watch a basketball game, granted, they do sit down and take breaks. But I'm not seeing the majority of these guys get tired. Sure, LeBron, but then when you're 6'9", 260, damn, they're all muscle, and you're playing 40 minutes, you're going to cramp up eventually. Yeah. But I'm thinking, if you know all you're doing is a fight for 15 minutes, how are you gassing? How is it that you're gassing out? Yet I can watch a jiu-jitsu tournament, which, again, I know it's plainly different, but I'm seeing guys 40 and 50 years old rolling the whole time. You know, granted, spots here and there, but I just always wondered, and I wanted to ask you, because I know you're a guy that's in tremendous shape, and you brought up a good point. If you're jogging and you got a fight coming up, there's no need to go from jogging 3 miles to 5 miles. You know what you do? Jog those 3 miles. If you jog the 3 miles in, let's just say, 25 minutes, try to aim for 21.
Yeah.
Try to aim for 18.
That's exactly
because what you end up doing is, if you try to go that 5 miles, you're going to end up wearing your body down. Come fight time, your legs are going to be like spaghetti. Your cardio, which you think is good, it's actually going to go further because now you got to put more into keeping your legs up underneath you. You're a boxing expert, so you appreciate this. When Tommy Hearns fought Marvin Hagler, great fight.
The war.
Yes. Yeah, one of the greatest fights ever. The first round was, oh my gosh, probably the greatest first round in boxing history. But I do remember reading Tommy Hearns saying one of the reasons he came out so early, the way that he did, firing all cylinders, his legs were gone. He's like, if you notice me in there, I only move around a little bit, and then I'm trying to sit there and take them out because my legs were gone because I overtrained for this fight. I wanted my cardio to be so good, I ended up overtraining myself. So I just wanted to get your thoughts and views on just the whole idea of, should guys – focus more on strength and conditioning. Cowboy Cerrone says he doesn't really even spar anymore when he trains because, you know, the head traumas, no need for all that. So I just wanted to get a fighter's perspective, especially somebody who's constantly in shape, on what they thought about the strength and conditioning going into a fight. Because I tell you, I would love to see a fighter at any level do that, where he trains all the basic stuff off season, but when he has a fight, it's like 80 or 90% strength and conditioning, and see how he looks and performs for his fight. And if it works, hey, it's a copycat world out here. We'll start doing that. You know, if I see you pushing a sled with a parachute on, well, he's doing something I'm not doing. Let me start doing it. Well, if I see you doing all that, I might start doing that as well with the strength and conditioning. So I definitely want to get your thoughts and opinions on that going forward. Now, I want to get your thoughts and opinions on this other matter that you also brought up too, and we're going to get to UFC 280 here in just a minute, but the time in an MMA fight, 5-minute rounds, used to be no time limits. Then they had to put rounds in there, but they're 5 minutes. Boxing is 3 rounds. Why can't MMA just do 3 rounds? Kickboxing does 3 rounds, and those are some fun fights to watch on Glory. Why can't MMA be a 3-round event? Hey, you still do 15 minutes, do 5 3-minute rounds. And then for the main event, you whatever equals 25 going forward or whatever. Why can't they shorten the rounds? Because then if you shorten the rounds, You're not having guys trying to conserve their energy for 5 full minutes. You've seen some guys, they'll take about a half a minute to a minute to fill each other out to get the range. We engage each other, but then I'm not pushing you so hard because I'm only at 3.5 minutes. I want to make sure I got my gas tank. What are your thoughts on potentially in the future, maybe MMA going from 5 to 3 minute rounds, or is that just a bad idea?
Yeah, I don't like it because I'm a striker and everybody's fucking grabbing me, you know? So I remember one fight, you know, I fought a UFC vet and he was squeezing me so tight. I was trying to get my hand in to get the underhook back. And it was like his arm was fused to my body. And like he was squeezing me that so tight. James from the corner after the fight, like, brought it up to me. You know how hard you got to be squeezing somebody for the outside corner, man, to see that there's zero space. Wow. So as long as these wrestlers that just hold to exist, us strikers, we actually need the time to get them off of us, you know? And with 3 minute round, by the time we get some of these guys off, the round's over. And the way these judges, how terrible they are, they'd be like, oh, he held him and did nothing for 3 minutes. He wins the round, you know? So we need the time to at least try to come back and hit these guys that's holding, you know. But the main thing that needs to change isn't even the time. It needs to change. I'm a big, big fan of pride rules, not this in the sense of stomping and people and that, but in that damage and activity are the main criteria to winning that fight. Because if you think about a fight, the point is to get the guy out of there, you know, because in pride, if you're a wrestler, you hold a guy down laying on him, you lose a point. You know, so because you weren't even trying to fight.
So you don't bring the yellow card back?
Hey, I bring
the penalty
card back.
10% of your purse?
Back. I don't believe in 10% of the purse, you know, but I think it should be a point deduction.
Maybe a point.
A point deduction, you know, because it's messing things up. How you have to hurt a person to win a fight. So why they're allowing these people to just hold on people, do nothing and win fights? You know, like BJ Penn, GSP won. I thought BJ won because GSP was just grabbing. You can't do that. You know, and I've been in there. It's the most frustrating thing in the world, you know.
Let me ask you this. Then on top of that, what if they took away win bonuses? You know, you get X amount to show, X amount to win. Now, granted,
I hate that.
They can still do knockout performance, fight of the night bonuses, stuff like that. But Matt Mitrione, who's with Bellator now, he was talking about this, yep, as well. They should take out win bonuses because, like you were saying with the wrestlers, I think that's part of why they would want to do that is because they know, oh, I get a win bonus. Well, if he's a striker, I'm just going to hold him, take him down. I'm going to get the win because I get the bonus.
Yeah.
But if there's no win bonus and it's a shorter time limit, maybe now it forces them to say, oh, I got to go out here and really try to freaking win.
I think there should be no win bonus. No win bonus. I still think there should be 5 minute rounds, but you should get penalized for stalling or at quicker stand ups, whatever. But the here's what you get to fight, here's what you get to win thing, it's a fucking travesty. MMA fighters are underpaid greatly, mm-hmm, as is. And in any other combat sport promotion across the board ever besides MMA that does that. No boxing promotion does that. No kickboxing promotion does that. Nothing else ever does that. How can you have people doing a sport like this? And it's like, oh, well, thank you for your effort, but you lost. It wasn't enough. Let me take half the money you need to live when we're already underpaying you. If you look at every other sport, it's like, this is your purse. And depending on where you at in your career and who you beat, is your purse gets larger, but your purse is your purse. You know, they don't say if you lose Floyd, you don't get your $35 million. We taking half of it. You know that there's no logic to that. It's just promoters being fucking cheapskates, and I've always hated it. You know, and if you think about it, a lot of people might not know this. Dream, Sengoku, you remember those shows?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Pride, K1 Heroes, they were all flat rates. Even when I went to fight in Japan, still over there and everything, it's flat rates. And that's how it should be. You know, only these other, it's a ripoff. It's just a way of being a cheapskate to save money. I don't agree with it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. Obviously, with you being a fighter, you know, I obviously take what the stories that you say and give. And then obviously, you know, just reading the UFC doesn't disclose what they actually pay the fighters. They kind of just give their base salary for the fight, but they don't tell you about bonuses with the pay-per-view cuts and whatnot. So you really don't know what these fighters make. But when you look at some of the breakdowns, especially with the Reebok deal, it's like, wait, these guys are going out, the men and women are going out there getting their heads kicked in, and they're making $2,500 for a fight. Or for a sponsorship. Yeah. When, you know, so you look at someone like Brendan Schaub, maybe it sounded outlandish at the time, but when he said, hey, I made over $100K in my fights just from sponsorships, $100K to $2,500, yeah, I can see why he wouldn't want to wear the Reebok gear.
Henderson was getting five figures a month in sponsorship. He had the monthly ones, and it was all gone. How can you justify doing that to some? You know?
What's crazy is, I don't know if you heard it, but remember when Rampage, before Reebok signed with the UFC, remember when Rampage signed with Reebok?
Yep.
He wanted to wear it to the ring, but they told him no because the UFC wasn't getting a cut of it.
Yep,
and now they got the Reebok gear where now he has to wear it if he was to ever come back. Yep. So it's like, wow, this is it's a crazy game. Crazy game.
People don't pay attention to how much stuff be going wrong in the game. You know, taking away sponsorship, putting Reebok. And then putting these things like, oh, five fights, you get 2,500, six and 10 fights, you get 10,000, that kind of shit. You have the kind of stuff with that dude, Ali Azeebula Zabel, whoever the hell he is, with World Series of Fighting, and him amongst other people who are managers, but presidents and matchmakers for shows. Then you have William Morris Endeavor, who bought the UFC, and they're signing people to their roster. As much dumb shit as I see, I hate almost every reporter in MMA. There's only a few good ones left writing dumb shit. Why is nobody talking about this stuff? No one's questioning any of this stuff. How can I trust that? Who did they just sign, Karate Hottie? How can I trust that you, the owner of this company, ain't going to give Karate Hottie everything favorable possible for her to win?
That is weird that you're a talent agency and an owner of a fight promotion, and you're signing fighters under your banner to your talent agency. So there's not a conflict of interest there. Who's to say that she doesn't start getting her picture put on the posters? Mm-hmm. She's not going to be able to put on the ticket, but higher up the card and whatnot. So,
company, too. She's going to get the movie deal, the spot. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Report that, guys.
It is tough. It is, you know, and you know what? There are some really good reporters out there.
Yeah.
I do wonder this. Do you think it's because the UFC can do what Dana White did to Ariel Helwani last year? They can blackball him. They can say, all right, we're just going to take your credentials away. And, you know, if you want to report the dark side or the shady side of what's going on, go ahead. See how you end up not being here anymore for these conferences.
But Dana don't run it no more.
No, Dana doesn't want it. But, I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure he, along with others in the front office, could say, yeah, we don't want this there. We don't want that person there or this network there or whatever. You think that plays into it at all?
Maybe. But here's the thing. When you pay $4 billion, you owe a lot of fucking money. You better have every report. You can't afford to lose a good reporter.
Yeah.
You can't. Because you need to get anything out there and make your money back. I don't care how much money WME got. You're in the red.
No press is bad press.
You are in the red right now. So, you know,
it is a shady game. And as we go along with more Inside the Octagon, who knows? Maybe Inside the Octagon will be the show that talks about the other side, not trying to bash them or to just point the finger at them for being wrong. But, you know, just as I say, you want to call it right down the middle. I want to call you out when you do something good, but I also got to call you out and be fair when you do something bad and shady.
That is a real reporter. And
yeah.
There's not many real ones left. You know, I think of like four or five.
Yeah, that's true. But there's some pretty interesting ones. But yeah, you're right. Now, as we're wrapping up the show here, we got about maybe 35 minutes left for Inside the Octagon here. Once again, this is Kalani Lua with Dominique the Fallen Angel Robinson. And we got UFC 208 in Brooklyn, New York. BK.
Brooklyn.
I got a question, though. I got a question. Who's in the main event?
Holly Holm. Jermaine Duraidaman.
What weight class are these women fighting at?
45.
Does the UFC currently have a 145-pound division?
Now they do.
Okay. So technically, these women are fighting for the 145-pound belt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who is the baddest 145er in the women's division?
Cyborg.
Why is she not in this fight?
It's all a joke, man. Well, you know, she did get popped for something. But they gave Ronda Rousey the belt Why aren't they giving Cyborg the belt? The best. When they were saying Ronda Rousey was the best female fighter on the planet, they were lying to everybody. It's always been Cyborg. And after what Amanda Nunes did to her and Holly Holm, I hope everybody shut up, because I was always feeling insulted for Cyborg that people were even hinting that Ronda Rousey could beat that woman.
They were hinting that she could beat Cain Velasquez and Floyd Mayweather.
I know. Yeah. Come on, man. Reality check. People.
Layla Ali. They said she could beat Layla Ali.
Come on, man. Yeah. And she said that she could beat, like, Mackenzie Dern and everybody else in jiu-jitsu. You know, that shit was absurd. And everybody was like, yeah, she can. I'm stupid. But you know what I mean? Like, Cyborg is a 45-pound champ. You know, she fucked herself with this whole steroid thing, granted. But they doing so many damn interim belts. This should have been an interim belt when she come back for the real belt.
No, I agree with that as well. When they came out with the idea of the 45-pound belt, they should have gave her the initial belt. Unfortunately, they made her cut to 140 twice, which was just brutal. And yeah, you're right. This should have been an interim title, not granny. Like you were saying, WME needs to make their money back. So they're not only are they giving interim belts out left and right, they probably figured, no, let's make this one. Dana White said he offered Cyborg this fight, but she said, I can't do it in 8 weeks. I need 12 weeks to get down there. And even back to her Elite XC days against Gina Carano, it was even known then she was struggling to make 145. Do you think the UFC was fair? And granted, 8 weeks does sound like enough, but when it's somebody who you know needs extra time, was the UFC fair in making this fight without her?
Nah. You know, Dana White, he's always treated her like shit. I have no why. Making jokes about how she's a man and got a dick and stuff with Ronda Rousey is disrespectful. You know what I mean? Then Ronda Rousey had that one person call her fat and was like, you can't shame women. I'm like, that's what you were doing.
Yeah.
And nobody reports that. This is what I'm talking about, man. That's why inside the Octagon, man, I do anything in my power after I go kill everybody in Asia and just take over to get this stuff big. Because you got to speak the real, man. And ain't nobody speaking the real out there. You know, that's the 45-pound champ. No matter who wins this, they ain't the 45-pound champ. They have something and have always had something against that woman, and it's a shame. You know, I met her in person. I know her boyfriend, Ray Elby. Sweet, sweet woman. Sweet, sweet woman. You know, it's a lot of guys that came through Thailand that, like, were, like, hiding out and entourage and not wanting to work out with the normal people in this. That woman worked out with the normal people, was there every day, no entourage, walked down the street signing autographs like a fucking normal human being. You know what I mean? Like, and they treat her like that. It, come on, man. It's wrong. This thing is starting to become too much entertainment and not enough sport. It's not like when I first started, you know, then it needs to be equilibrium back, and people need to know who the Dana White said Conor McGregor is the best pound for pound fighter on earth. That tells you how far how far this shit's going. You know,
I enjoy Mystic Mac. I enjoy Conor McGregor. He's very good. There's a 125 pounder out there named Mighty Mouse that'll say, best who?
Yes.
When he comes back, there's a 205er with arms from here to Timbuktu that'll say, best who?
Yeah. So he's the only person. John Jones is the only person. If somebody was like, he's the best pound for pound, I say DJ. But if somebody said John Jones, that's the only person you can talk about. Yeah, you can make the argument with. Nobody else. And if somebody wants to go further and go overall, you can add Anderson in. But outside of that, you can't talk about nobody else. Yeah. You can't talk. There's nobody else you can talk about. Literally. You know what I mean? And if you go super far back, you could put, like, Fedor in there, you know, but.
Well, I personally think Fedor is one of the most overrated fighters of all time.
Woo!
Now, listen, overrated does not mean you're a bum. It does not mean that. But overrated means you're not a 5-star, 4-star, 3.5 maybe, but not a 5.
But you got to look at it for the time also. People don't be fair. They be like, oh, yeah, I don't see him in the UFC fighting Cain Velasquez. He's overrated. But you got to go for the time. Because I tell you like this. Take Pride Nogueira, put him in the UFC at the same time he entered it. He was heavyweight champ. That, you know?
Without question.
Yeah, nobody was beating him. But when he was in there at the age he was, after all that damage, he didn't look good. So you got to look for the time period. For that time period, that guy beat all the best heavyweights in the world for his time. So for his time, he's the best, you know? That's what it is.
He also beat the mailman who was delivering mail there for Pride. He defeated the milkman. He defeated a pro wrestler who had one MMA fight. I mean, look, I do understand what you're saying, and obviously we're going to get into 2-8, but Fedor did beat, you know, the Krokovs, the Nogueras. He did beat those guys. But when you also have a resume where you're taking on sumo wrestlers, I mean, basically they had guys like me with little to no experience going out there and just saying, go out there and get done up by Fedor one time. You know, it does look at it and say, you beat some good guys, but
it makes it look funny, but you have to look at the overall picture. You have to say, here's his time period. Who were the best heavyweights at this time? And how many of them did he beat? You have to look at it from that perspective, because let's just say there were 8 other great heavyweights besides himself, and he beat all 8. It don't matter if he beat the milkman and shit. He beat the 8 best at his time still. You know, and when it comes to heavyweights, me personally, I think the only 2 heavyweights you can even talk about as the greatest in the sport of MMA is him and Werdum. That's it. You know what I mean?
What about Randy? Captain America. The Natural.
You know, he was all over the place. He was heavyweight and light heavyweight. So, you know what I mean? So I kind of got him in that middle ground. I think you could say he's one of the greatest overall, you know, but I'm speaking just strictly heavyweights. I would put Werdum and Fedor, because Fedor beat the best at his time, and then Werdum, he took the torch, and then he beat everybody else who was even being discussed as some of the best. So
when I also look at when Fedor did come to America, granted, you know, he is older, but Nogueira came and he did find some success in his early time in the UFC, intern champion after Silva, did lose to Frank Mir, beat Randy Couture and whatnot. But when I look at Fedor, like when he came to Strikeforce, wasn't impressive. He got done up by Bigfoot Silva, Dan Henderson, who technically is a middleweight, knocking him out. So, you know, granted, father time affects everyone differently. You see, and that's another thing.
Everybody was roided. There was no testing.
Look
at this. People don't trip off this. This show you how much steroids do. And I fought people on steroids. They could take a shot. Look at Pazau. When he fought Fedor, he was getting hit with bombs and not flinching. UFC, I could punch him and he get knocked out, dog.
That you slam the door too hard.
So nobody's questioning, like, what changed? You know, nobody. Look at Fejao. I watched him do my boy King Mo dirty, and he was ripped. And then he went to UFC. He looked like he was pregnant. You know what I mean? That shit changes stuff, man.
No, it really does. I mean, Pride, I mean, they even talked about it that they even said in the contracts, we do not test for antibiotical steroids.
NFC don't test right now.
They don't. You know what? Maybe when we do another show in the future, we could talk about it. I personally do not care that guys use it. I think, if anything, there should be a mutual agreement that you either want to have 2 guys fight who are clean, or if you're using it, then you're going to be matched up. Use it, or you're going
to
be matched up against somebody who is
legal or illegal. You know what I mean? If I've seen, like, everybody on steroids and Super Saiyan 2 mode fighting, the fight ain't going to be worse. So as a fan, why do I care? But as a fighter, all jokes aside, well, actually, I ain't even joking. As a fan, why do I care? But as a fighter, though, I know the kind of damage you could do on that stuff, you know?
Yeah, but did we see anybody in Pride or in any other organization that allowed it? Did we really see anybody get more messed up
Gary Goodrich?
Yeah.
You know, and he fought everybody who was like on a whole cocktail of steroids. You know what I mean? So
no, understandable. But then at the same time, you know, can it be that because they were on steroids, or can it be because he fought a lot of fights and took a lot of shots to the head?
Look at, for example, Vitor Belfort on steroids destroyed. He was doing shit he ain't never done before or since. So I don't really think it's about, I don't feel like it make your punching power go up. You know what I mean? It does make your physical strength go up, your durability go up. Some of them make your stamina go up. But that extra aggression and lack of fear, that's what's going to equal the extra damage on the people. You know what I mean? Like Vitor on steroids, what did he have? 3 head kick knockouts in a row?
Yeah, or at least 3 out of 4.
You know what I mean? That, like, and then he gets off of it. He doesn't have that, like, fearlessness anymore, and he's just getting manhandled. So the steroids can lead to extra damage.
Yeah, but you're also saying, hey, guys, you might get extra damage in the sport where you are voluntarily going and saying, I want someone to punch, elbow, kick, and knee me in the head. Come on now. I mean, this isn't a science project or a computer job that they're having. This is combat sports. It, you know, it's just like with football players. And I know we're about to get into UFC 2A, but it's just like football players. You volunteer to go out there and play football. You are saying, I want to smash my head against him because I'm better, and vice versa, right? So afterwards, when I got head injuries, shouldn't I kind of know that that's what's expected from the job?
I agree, but at the same time, you know, some might agree or not, I've always been into martial arts.
Yeah.
And this is a combination of arts. So I believe in fair play. That's just me.
Well, that's why I said, if you're using, you fight somebody who's using, and
I'm saying fair play, I mean, like, ain't nobody using everything. Like, if you got the skills to get the job done, being who you are, that's what it is. If not, not. That's just the martial artist side of me. You know what I mean?
I got you.
That, you know, but some people, like, it's not martial arts, it's a fight. You know? So it's a matter of perspective, you know?
No, and I got you. And again, this is a topic, obviously, we could dive more into and talk more at length to, but we got to get to this fight card coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. Holly Holm versus Jermaine Durandamy for the women's UFC featherweight 145-pound title. Durandamy is going into this fight, winner of her last two, winner of 4-1 in the UFC. Her only loss came to Amanda Nunes, bless you. And she's taking on Holly Holm, obviously the former UFC bantamweight champion, but loser of her last two. How do you see this fight going with two stand-up strikers?
I'm going to tell you like this. I personally know Jermaine. I personally train with her. Holly Holm ain't beating that girl. It's two women in my life that hit me harder than most dudes, and she one of them. You know, and I'm durable. You know what I mean? You can't get – Jermaine ain't no joke. She ain't no joke. And Holly Holm be hesitant sometimes, and she like to pop shot, stick, and move. Jermaine is like, I mean, yo, shit, what it do? And that's it. There ain't no fearless. And she got power. I'm telling you, man. She got power, and she got stamina for days. And there's no hesitation in pulling that trigger.
No, she is a tremendous striker coming from a Muay Thai kickboxing background. Yeah, I mean 46-0, and again, her only UFC loss was to Amanda Nunes, who is the champion right now. So this is going to be an interesting matchup. I do wonder, even though Holly Holm does have the boxing and kickboxing background, considering who she's taking on, would she maybe look to do a classic Jackson Winklejohn strategy? Take her to the ground, stay on the outside, not necessarily engage her as much, and maybe try to take her out of her element. We've seen at times they'll go the opposite way with the game plan, a la with George St. Pierre. Hey, I'm going to take you out of your element to benefit me. Do you think Holly would do that, or is she so embedded with the stand-up game that she's just going to say, you know what, I just got to go out there and let it hang loose because this is my chance to get another title?
You know what? I have two parts answers to that. One, they can make the best game plan in the world. If she hasn't worked her skills to implement it, it will never work. And me, you, nobody knows if that girl can even wrestle or not. You know? And the second thing, when she fought Shevchenko, she didn't do well with somebody who also can move. Jermaine has footwork and is taller than Shevchenko.
Yeah.
I think she's taller than Holly.
She is. She's an inch taller.
So you got somebody taller than you with long reach and got the footwork to keep up with. Yo, this ain't Ronda Rousey. She ain't fighting these Ronda Rousey walk forward and back people anymore. You know, when you get to that high level of Shevchenko, and here's the thing, as good as Shevchenko was, she ain't Jermaine's level. Jermaine was the person at the time, and a lot of you fans might not notice, there's this Greg Blackson, should I keep up with everything? She was supposed to fight. She was the person that they were talking about fighting Lucia Riker, who's the best overall combat sports female of all time. And they never fought. And Jermaine is saying Lucia was the one turning down the fight. So this girl's at a whole nother level. And like I said, people look at JJ as another level, but they don't know Valentina beat JJ three times. And Jermaine's levels above Valentina. So people don't even grasp the level of striking this girl has. That, you know, she's going to put the hands on her, man.
A lot of fans, you know, they're not necessarily mixed martial arts fans. They're UFC fans.
Yeah.
Which, look, I'm not knocking anybody out there. You know, again, you know, that's the major thing here in America. It's the number one program brand here in America for mixed martial arts. So I'm not knocking that. But you're right. A lot of these fighters, they're not just UFC fighters. They had careers in other sports beforehand, and some of them that came from the same background either did cross paths or were supposed to cross paths, but for one reason or another didn't. This is going to be a very exciting fight. I'm hoping these ladies continue to streak and tear the house down. I hope that they go in there and they just put on a very good show. Holly Holm, she may not be on the same level of striking, but I do think that with her training camp and the fact that she's lost two in a row, I really do think she's going to come out with a little bit more fire in herself. Now, granted, like Mike Tyson said, everybody got a game plan until you get hit in the face. So who knows? She might take one punch and abort everything. You never know. But I really do see this being a really good fight. It's not the high-profile fight you would expect to headline a pay-per-view in New York. But still, I think if the fans tune in, this is going to be a fight they really are appreciative that they checked out. Just like 206, we thought that was going to be a bad card. Yeah. That was one of the best cards of the year. Yeah. So I think this might potentially be a main event that people
like
definitely
card.
Need to check
I like
out.
This card.
It's not that bad. It doesn't have necessarily the big name like a lot of people were hoping as far as Rousey or McGregor or Cyborg. But it certainly does have a good card on there. Speaking of good cards and big names, the co-main event.
Yeah.
Derek Brunson.
Yeah.
Is going to be handed the opportunity of a lifetime to take on the former middleweight king, possibly the greatest MMA fighter of all time, the myth, the legend, the man himself, Anderson, the Spider Silva, making his long-awaited return almost a full year. Because you remember last year he fought in London against Michael Bisping, yeah. But then he fought at 200, but that was at 205. So he hasn't fought at middleweight in almost a year. Silva, Brunson, how you see this one going?
You know, I've never been into Derek Brunson. Then when he started knocking everybody out, I'm like, how is it with that sloppy shit? I'm like, this shows you that 4-ounce gloves, what it can do. Because with boxing gloves on, he would be getting the hands put on him. But, you know, and he always running towards people with his chin up. And, you know, Anderson is great going backwards. So I didn't even look at this as a real match. And then when I saw the countdown, and I see Anderson working out hard, fucking with Jacare and everybody. And I see Derek Brunson and that little Jimmy built with like five dudes that have been training like 2 months. I'm like, no, that ain't how you get ready. Go back down to Greg Jackson's up to New York. That ain't far. I got family in North Carolina. New York, you could drive right there. I don't even get what's on his mind, but that's a death sentence in my book, you know? It was already stylistically, he had holes in his game that was like, this ain't good. But after seeing that, I'm like, dude, you asking to die.
Yeah, you look at that. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier with OSP, there is something to be said about when you have the smaller camps and it's more focused on you. But you also can't be training at the YMCA like James Toney for a big fight. Especially like you said, Brunson, who does have a wrestling background, wrestled in college. So, you know, and Silva, you even touch him with your arms, he's going to the ground. So, but he does have a tendency to come forward a lot, chin up, almost wide open. Now, he does have power. He will throw those broad shoulders with the stiff right. He can connect on you. But if that, you got one of the greatest counterpunchers of all time, one of the greatest technicians as far as execution of all time in Silva. He'll do it. Look, ask Chris Leben what happens when you just bum rush Anderson Silva. 49 seconds later, you got him doing the cha-cha dance in there. So Brunson looking to get a win. His last fight was in November of 2016. It was a loss to Robert Whittaker, but before that, he was on a 6-fight win streak. He's winner. Oh no, excuse me, 5-fight win streak. He is the winner of 7 of his last fights. His only 2 losses came against Joe Romero and Robert Whittaker. Victories over Uriah Hall, Sam Alvey, Ed Herman, Lorenz Larkin, so and Chris Leben as well. So he's been in there with some tough guys. Yeah, this is going to be his toughest matchup.
You know what? And it's not even that he's at a small gym. It's his own gym. So he's in charge of running it. It's crazy, man.
Yeah, and you know, look, like you said, UFC fighters are underpaid. Maybe he just look at it and saying, this is a way for me to save some money. I do have a family on the side. Even though I want to do the best, I can't just have them go starving. Me, I could do it because I got to cut weight, but I don't want my family starving. So let me try to cut corners where I can. Maybe it pays off for him. Maybe he pulls the Chael Sonnen idea, a game plan, goes in there, wrestles him, utilize his grinding pound. Silva, you know, one of the best, but let's be honest, it's been a while since he's gotten a legit win. Do you see Silva? Can Silva still pull it off? Can Silva still be the spider? Over 40, been a while since he's gotten a victory. In fact, I believe it's been 3.5 years since he's got a legit victory because his win against Nick Diaz, got overturned.
Yep.
So can Silva still capture his old self, or is it just time for the Silva to go?
You know what? He didn't look bad versus Nick. He didn't look bad versus Bisping, and he didn't look bad versus Cormier. You know, Cormier was laying on him.
Yeah.
So, you know, because he was getting them hands put on him whenever they were standing up. So, and Cormier, no joke. He stood up with John Jones and Gus better than he stood up with Anderson, you know. So I think he still got some left in there. His durability is slightly down. But besides that, you know, I don't see too much more changed. He still got it. I think that's the only thing I've seen different is, like, now you see him get, like, hurt a little bit more often. But other than that, man, he's still fast. He's still slick.
He has – Silva has a tendency at times to really – I don't want to say coast, but he has a tendency to kind of be a little relaxed. You know, we all know it's going to take him about a good minute before he throws his first strike, unless you just completely bum rush him. He's going to find his distance. He's going to switch stance. He's going to move around. But there's times where I'm a little bit frustrated because I'm like, Silva, with all your skills, why aren't you a little bit more aggressive? You don't got to be wild, but why not just be a little bit more aggressive and finish the guys off, get that spectacular victory? Because as good as you are, you know, you get one highlight reel finish, you're potentially next in line for a title shot with that because of your name, your resume, and what you've done. So I am curious to see, will he push the action? Will he try to go forward in this one and finish Derek Brunson? And look, no disrespect to Derek Brunson, but he's just not at that level yet of where Anderson Silva is as far as career-wise. So I wonder if Silva is, one, kind of overestimate him, or will he kind of just say, you ain't on my level, I got to get you out of here because I don't want to take no damage because I want to get back in here as quick as possible and finish out my career. So that's going to be a very interesting matchup. A lot on the line for both men. Speaking about a lot on the line, the very next – the fight before Silva and Brunson, Tim Boach taking on Jacare Souza. Yeah. Jacare, for whatever reason, is not getting a title shot. I do not understand it, but this is his ultimate opportunity. Boach is a very tough opponent. If Jacare can get a victory, especially an impressive one, he can certainly benefit and potentially be next in line for a future title shot. How do you see Jacare Boach going?
You know, most people would just say Jacare got this and blow him out the water, but Boach find ways to win, man. Like I don't know. That dude is durable and will sit there and take an ass whooping and keep coming at you. And he, a lot of these guys don't got heart and perseverance in them. He does.
Yeah.
So, you know, it ain't going to be an easy fight. You know, Jacare on the ground, you know, it don't even got to be Jacare on the ground. Boach on his back, that ain't his best area. But that ain't the easiest guy to get on his back. And Jacare ain't the best of wrestlers, though he's a better jiu-jitsu wrestler like Maya. So it's going to come down to that stand-up. And since Boach has that durability, you know, Dan Henderson's the only one I can remember wiping him out on the feet.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to end up being a fight. I give it to Jacare in the end because that dude won his belt, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But I think it's going to end up being a good fight. And I like the way Boach, speaking of the small gym that's focused on you, that's what Boach has. If you know, you watch the countdown, and I saw, like, good wrestlers in there on him and stuff, they, you know, so he's getting ready for it, what I feel is the correct way. But then again, Jacare's at X Gym, which is a small gym focused on you. So, you know, it's going to be a good fight.
This is an interesting matchup because just for all the reasons that you pointed out, Boach is not a tough guy to put away. I mean, Rockhold and Henderson kind of did their things with him. That's okay. But everyone else, win or lose, they have found out Boach is not tough, easy to go at it all. And he hits like a man who just – he hits like you stole his money in school and he ain't forgave you yet.
Clubbing punches.
Yeah, you know? So it's not going to be easy. And like you said, Jacare – he is improving in his stand-up, but it's not there yet. So, you know, we saw against Joe Romero, he can get clipped. And even when he goes to the ground, if you're on top, you do some ground and pound, you can land some punches on Jacare. So, you know, with Jacare, as good as he is with jiu-jitsu, one of the best in the world, and that's not, you know, trying to blow his credentials out the water, is his resume speaks for itself. I certainly hope that he's worked on wrestling and then as well as some of the stand-up. Because look at Damian Maya. he fell in love with the striking, got away from going to the ground so much, wasn't as successful. Now he says, look, I'm one of the best in the world on the ground. Let me just worry about taking guys down and then utilizing my jiu-jitsu. And look, he's gone on a win streak, and he's almost in line for a title shot.
Why are they doing this to everybody? Why Jacare should have had a title shot and got it? Maya should have had a title shot and got it? Max Holloway still ain't got his real one. Why are they doing this to people?
I don't know. You know, obviously the big thing would just say, well, maybe you guys aren't marketable enough, which I don't understand how, because Jacare is a very, very well-known fighter in the MMA community.
And jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. You got Damian Maya, another one who's very well-respected there. Max Holloway, granted, at first, people weren't really up on him, maybe just people from Hawaii, but you start winning 8, 9, 10 in a row, people start taking notice that this guy's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. So, I don't know, you know, but you know what? I like what Max Holloway is doing. I like the fact that he's calling out the champion. He's calling for the big fights, and he's backing it up. So all you can do is keep on winning. And this one, you know what Jacare could benefit the most from? Not only getting the victory, but if his teammate Anderson Silva loses. Because Michael Bisping, who's recovering from knee surgery, he's probably going to fight Yoel Romero next.
Yeah, they said they're fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they said.
Yeah.
I'm not believing it, so I see that damn poster. Okay. But Bisping also says he only wants 1, 2, maybe 3 fights left before he retires, but he wants money fights.
Yeah.
If you look at the middleweight division right now, who's the biggest money fight you can have in the middleweight division? Anderson Silva. He already beat him, but he's a legend. A future Hall of Famer, and obviously they could play off of their first fight was so close. Silva with the flying knee in the third round that almost finished them, but Bisping comes back and beats them. They thought it was trash. Silva, if Silva gets a win, Bisping, let's just say he beats Romero. Maybe, maybe not, but let's say he does.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fight to make right there.
Yeah.
And
or,
once again, Jacare is left out in the cold.
Or there's been talks about him fighting Nick Diaz.
No, and see, that's...
And then skip him right ahead.
See, that's what I'm saying, is that in the middleweight right now, because Diaz, you know, he hasn't come back yet, and so we don't know what he's going to do. Obviously, Diaz is out there. There's some Canadian dude named George St. Pierre. I don't know if you ever saw him fight. I heard he was pretty good during his time. But if he comes back, that could be another fight. So, but right now, if I'm looking at this card, I know Jacare wouldn't wish it on him, but you got to think that in the back of his head, he's got to be thinking, if Silva goes out there and KOs this guy like he did Belfort, or does them all like he did Rich Franklin, and I don't look as impressive, I might get overlooked once again for a title shot.
So,
I know Jacare not only needs to get an impressive victory, but in some ways, he kind of hopes that if Silva wins, it's got to be a sloppy decision victory or just an uneventful match or something, because if anything else, Silva might get the next shot or Diaz or GSP going forward here. Also on the card, we got Glover Teixeira trying to come back after that 13-second
knockout.
That's
my boy. What's up, Glover? That's my boy. I got to do something real quick. Marcel Fortuna, that's my homie from the Bay I train with. Congrats on the knockout, you know?
Right on, right on. Bay Area live indeed.
Yeah.
Teixeira going to be on the card. This is an interesting matchup I like right here. Dustin Poirier versus Jim Miller.
Yeah.
That's an exciting – Jim Miller's never – he's not the big name guy as far as conventional fans, but he is a dynamite of a fighter. Poirier, since moving to 55, he's been a totally different fighter, even though he lost to Michael Johnson. That's going to be a very good fight. I'm very much looking forward to seeing Randy Brown.
People sleeping on that versus Bilal Muhammad. That's going to be a good fight.
Yeah, I think it is, too, because I've been following Randy ever since I saw him on Dana White looking for a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, I want all those fighters on there. Hopefully we see you on there someday, along with James as well. Get to the UFC, and, you know, you want to see how do they do. Are they good enough and well? This isn't that bad of a card. You got Ian McCall on here, once again, having a late replacement for opponents. Nick Lentz is also on here as well. So there's some good fights here for UFC 208 that's going to be in Brooklyn. So you guys be sure to check that out as well. Dominique, we're about wrapping up here. We got just over 5 minutes left. You're about to endure on another trip to Asia.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that briefly, and just tell us what are your plans when you head over there, and when can we see you back here in the States or just back in the ring fighting again?
I'm going to be back in there soon this year, and I'm making up for all those years where I was fighting like 2 times, 1 time, no times, because over there they putting on like 16, 17, 18 shows a month. You know, I didn't get to fight when I was over there because I didn't have the right connections. But it's a lot of good things right there. I have the number one, the number two, and the number three gym in China asking me to be a trainer.
Right on.
You know, I have the biggest sports agency in Asia
talking to me about being in business with them as part owner and helping to train people. You know, my boy Mike Swick is starting a promotion where I might be the commentator in it. I'm opening my business at the Joint Hookette on Instagram.
What kind of business is it going to be?
It's a three-floor business. First floor is Thai food, Mexican food. Second floor is a night lounge. Third floor is rooftop where you just smoke that goody good, you know? So that's going to be going good. That's me and I have my friend Tarn, who's the manager out there, Thai. My manager, Tree Viegas, is going to be the COO. And then I have my partner, Kim Mason, you know, good business partner. So that's going to finish being built by March, open April. You know, I've been getting fight offers already, but I'm not training right now. And I'm 100% focused on getting this business open. And then once I get back out there at the end of the month, I'm going to add some training back in, be back to like 1,000% ready about time April comes around, you know? So after that, just fight, fight, fight. So it's a lot of things going on.
So obviously, you know, you got to go out there, see how things work out, get back into training. But now you said April, you'll be into it. Now, does that mean that's when we can expect you back in fighting, or is April going to be your time frame for I'm all into training, I'm back in there, and then maybe from there, 1 or 2 months later, you could look for me back in the cage? Because I know a lot of your fans and a lot of people in general want to see you get back out there and go out there and put on a good show. When can we expect – obviously you don't have a time set now. When do you think will be an ideal time that you would like to step back in the ring, cage, whatever, and get into a fight? What's the ideal day?
I think by the end of April, I'd be fighting all the time, maybe like 2-3 times a month. Like, it's that many fights out there, and I'm with the perfect people that own most of the promotions out there. You know, they literally own them, so they could put me in any time. So by the end of April, you'll see me a lot. Granted, I don't get knocked out. I have to take time off or break some shit, but yeah. That generally, that's never happened. So by the end of April, you'll be seeing me a lot. I'll make sure to get everything, you know, on tape, get it to you, you know, help me get it out there. And, you know, my boy Spilly Patrick, but you'll see me a lot. And I'm making sure that every knockout I get, because it's coming, you know, we call send it to Dana White, because they ain't got no fucking stars. They ain't got no stars in the UFC. You need to quit fucking around. They got that new UFC show coming on where it's guys on there that duck me again. A guy who won Ultimate Fighter I beat on there.
Who's that?
Joe Daddy. You got hella people from James season, and James season was one of the most boring seasons outside of James fighting, and he ain't on there. They need to get their shit together because they dying in star power. And, you know, me and James coming this year for real, for real.
Well, I mean, you know, and that's not just hype right there. If you actually look across, outside of Conor McGregor, Ronda Rousey, who knows if she's going to fight again. Brock Lesnar may not be back until July if he comes back, and Jon Jones being on the shelf. Who's the big stars in the UFC right now? Who are the guys that you can say that's the face of the company right now?
Ronda gone.
Exactly.
Conor arguing with them all the time. GSP going. Jones on cocaine. Everybody saying the same shit after these interviews. You know what I mean? We coming this year for sure.
If the UFC wants personalities and want exciting fighters, they got to reach outside their bubble and look for other guys. You, James, and many other fighters out there are certainly capable of carrying that torch going forward in the future. So, Don, man, one, appreciate you coming on the show once again. Great as always. Good luck to you in Asia. Definitely going to be keeping up with you, paying attention to you, and certainly hope that one day you, James, along with any other fighter that has aspirations of getting there, you get that chance in the UFC. Whether it's a one offer or whatever, getting that chance is what's important first, then taking advantage of it. So good luck to you. Before we close up, let people know where they can find you at on social media. And once again, man, thanks for coming on another episode of Inside the Octagon.
Find me at FallenAngel510 on Instagram, Line, WeChat, Twitter, all that. You know, check out at The Joint Hookette. That's at The Joint Hookette. My business out there in Thailand. You know, everybody feel free to come by. If you're a fan, hit me up. I'll hook you up. Play the free food, you know, for your first time coming in. Just holler at me and show me you following me on social media. You will get a free plate, you know. So come through, you know. Everybody, thanks for supporting me. You, thanks for supporting me, Spilled, Patrick, you know, Tree, Kim, James, my son, mom, everybody, you know what I mean, Crooklyn, Showman, Hetty.
Now, do they get a free plate per social media site that they follow you on, or is it just if
you
I follow
get,
you, you get
if you my homie, you could get something anytime.
If that's the case, I'll show you Instagram, Facebook.
Bash Rudin, Pat Miletich, George and guys. That, you know, thank you for everything you guys doing, especially you, Bass. You know, you taught me a lot of this stuff. So thank you. And thank you, Kalani.
Hey, man. No, thank you indeed, man. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Inside the Octagon. Tune in next Monday. Until then, take care. Peace.
James already left. I got James a job in China.
I know last time.
Yep, he left on Sunday. I haven't heard from him because China blocked.